me, the core of the film is, here's a guy who took a moral stand. It had to do with his religion. America has never understood who the black Muslims are and what they're about. And that's another dimension of the film that I think is terribly exciting. And, you know, here are people just talking about their faith in a way that we never hear in America.
We want to thank you both for being with us. Bill Siegel directed the new documentary, The Trials of Muhammad Ali. It'll premiere tonight at the Tribeca Film Festival. Gordon Quinn is the film's executive producer. That does it for our show. Tomorrow we'll be live streaming at 2 o'clock our event at Harvard University Science Center B, a big event with Noam Chomsky and Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars. I'll be moderating. I hope to see folks there, or you can see us online at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkner, Nate Pelzer, Not Mate, Ermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karandini, Guzder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And this is WHFR Dearborn. It's time now for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm station advisor here at WHFR FM, WHFR Dearborn, WHFR.fm on the internet, the station making waves, all volunteer student staff to keep us going from Henry Ford Community College. By the way, thank you to all of you who pledged during the last seven days, last week, from a week ago Monday and through last week Saturday. It was very nice to see that support. Not enough, never enough. We're the least expensive radio station broadcasting 24/7 in the whole United States of America, big or little towns. And we don't quite have enough. But we have another benefit coming up tonight. It's important. It's not just a party time, folks. Although it will be for some people who hopefully are going to enjoy the blues. So we're going to be at New Place Lounge in West Dearborn tonight with three great blues acts, Big Ray and the Motor City Kings, Motor City Josh, and Motor City Slim, a.k.a. Jeff Malin. And I'd love to have you there, you know, help support us. It's a $5 minimum donation at the door, and there are beverages and food available, 21 or older sort of thing. But we need to keep going here in spite of, difficult economic times. Let me just start. We're going to have a special interview in the studio today with Michigan Representative George DeRaney. He represents the 15th District, which is mostly good old Dearborn, and he's already in the studio, but I think maybe he's already read the Metro Times and Jack Lessenberry's column for this week, maybe not. So let's get us in the spirit of talking about the governor and recent bills in Michigan, and George will give us the real story here. This is Jack Lessenberry, and I'm going to try to, of course, read it with emotion that I think he probably intended. Please understand that all opinions expressed in this show, including mine and George DeRaney's, are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. Okay. Lessenberry from the Metro Times says, almost a century ago, Henry Louis Mencken blazed a trail as America's journalist who had a great, irreverent, wisecracking mind. He was also a cheerfully flamboyant atheist. For a writer to be openly against God back then was as brave as denouncing the psychotic nuts of the National Rifle Association would be for your average senator today. Once someone angrily asked Mencken what he would do if, having died, he found himself at St. Peter's Gate. Mencken said, "Gentlemen, I was wrong." I remembered last week, Lessenberry goes on, he says, when I was contemplating the latest trumpet blast from the administration of Governor Rick Snyder, the man so many moderates had hopes for. 3 years ago, many independents, even Democrats, crossed over to vote for Snyder in that year's Republican primary. He was seen as basically a technological type from Ann Arbor who might be pro-business, but likely socially liberal. It was clear the Democrats had no chance to retain the governor's seat in 2010. The only two running in the primary were Andy Dillon, correctly suspected of being mostly a Republican, and the eventual nominee, Lansing Mayor Virge Bonaro, clearly a not ready for primetime player. The other potential GOP nominees, Pete Hoekstra, Mike Cox, and Mike Bouchard, all seem potentially far worse than Gateway Rick. So lots of us voted for Snyder in the primary. You know that reference there. He did help begin and guide Gateway Computers far back in the 80s and 90s. So Snyder says, we hoped he might be somewhat like William Milliken, Republican governor who back in the 70s turned out to be the best friend the environment and Detroit ever had. Well, gentlemen, we were wrong. Very wrong. Last Monday, I got a press release from the governor's office with this headline, quote, state layoffs avoided as sequestration cuts now set to take effect. The governor bragged, we took a much more thoughtful approach here in Michigan in putting the budget in balance than those nincompoops in Washington. Well, good for us, thought I. Then I read a little bit further. Well, there is some impact, the governor acknowledged, quote, within the Department of Human Services, where the annual allowance for children's clothing will be eliminated. The clothing allowance of $137 per child is currently provided each August to 21,000 children, Lessenberry says. How matter of fact. Well, of course, the greedy little bastards don't need clothing. Are there no rags in the dumpsters? Next thing you know, they want formal wear. And after that, a second bowl of gruel, like that horrid Oliver Twist. Presumably, these aren't the 29,000 kids this administration cut off cash welfare assistance earlier, because these moochers have hopefully starved to death or become successful entrepreneurs by now. I hope you get the tone of voice. There is exaggeration and satire here, obviously, but he's trying to make a point, folks. As he says, the sequester is costing the state $59 million, however, and according to my calculator, cutting out clothes to kiddies doesn't completely make up the difference. Not to worry, our bean counters are on the job. The governor's announcement continues. The Department of Community Health will implement reductions to programs aimed at serving seniors, as well as other grant program areas such as nutrition services and injury and disease prevention, unquote. Lessenberry. That makes me feel a lot better about Michigan as a community. After warning that the schools will be next to feel the sequester acts, presuming it continues next year, the release goes on to quote Nixon, the new Nixon, John, the state budget director Snyder hired away from Utah. The good news here is that we have our fiscal house in order, Nixon chirped. Michigan is in a good position to manage these cuts because we already made the tough decisions to get our budget in structural balance for the long term. Lessenberry, yes, sirree. Destroy that village, and you no longer have to worry about saving it. When I sent the governor's release to Mark Tobias, an attorney who works with Native Americans in the Upper Peninsula, he thought it was satire. This is from The Onion, right? He said. Alas, no. And then there's additional things he mentions about the new education advisory board that that George is going to give us information about too. But welcome, George Durrani. I'm going to turn on your microphone so we can hear that. Let's try it again.
Hello.
Thank you for coming on our show today. We haven't seen you here on the air since last December 12th, but you've been out and about in the community. And this morning you were at the senior center.
Right. We did our normal constituent hours that we do every. Well, it's usually the last Friday of every month that we meet at the community center. Mm-hmm. And we're also added some constituent hours, which is at a local restaurant, Leon's Restaurant, that we do the second Monday at night. So folks that can't come during the day because they're working and have everything else going on in their lives, they can now visit me at night.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that. Was it last month that it began?
Yep.
Perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And the time, it's the second Monday at Leon's on Michigan there.
Yep, Michigan Avenue.
And something like 5 to 7 or?
6 to 7:30.
6 to 7:30.
Yep.
Okay. So they could still have dinner and come on over for
I'll buy a cup of coffee.
Oh, get it. Oh, look out, George.
Wow. Yeah.
You're going to get all the homeless in there for a cup of coffee now. And there might be a few out there. Okay. There's so many issues that have come up, so many legislative initiatives, let's say, that personally, I have to admit, I don't see anything beneficial to the common person in hardly any of these. I wanted to start on a positive note, though. So what have you been associated with that you think has been positive in these last, let's say, 4 months of 2013?
Well, I've served, as you probably know, since I became a state rep in the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. Mm-hmm. And I was able to introduce a bill that I think is important, and it'll help veterans. And actually, it was my first bill, and it was passed unanimously in the House not too long ago. There is a Senate version of the bill that'll probably be the one that'll be the public act, mm-hmm. but it doesn't make any difference to me whose name is on it. The important thing is that now veterans will have a designation on their driver's licenses and or their state IDs with a little V, and it'll help them to get some types of discounts and advantages that are afforded to them that a lot of businesses would like to see veterans get. And instead of having to come up with the paperwork and carrying this paperwork with you all the time to prove that you're a veteran, now
some sort of discharge papers.
Right.
I don't know what they give them, but
well, yeah. Oakland County has a designation that they put on driver's license, and so does Macomb, but Wayne County never had anything. And so we said, you know, why don't we just do it statewide? And it made a lot of sense. And so I'm happy to say that bill probably will pass. It probably passed the House and went to the Senate, the new version, which, you know, is the same version as mine, but mm-hmm. with a different name on it. But anyway, it'll come back and we'll vote on that, and that'll become law real soon.
Well, that's something. And certainly, no disrespect here, but I would call that tweaking. In other words, that's a little thing we can do that will help, doesn't really cost hardly any money probably.
Right.
Just have to make plans to do it that way, you know, and it will be a benefit certainly to our soldiers, the people that serve us in various military
our veterans,
situations. Yes.
Yep. And they've been asking for it too, you know, just to make it easier for them. And there's other things we're doing for veterans too, making it easier for them to if they have the experience in the military as far as their vocation, whether it be electronics or plumbing or welding or truck driving, then perhaps we can waive the fees for those licenses that they need in the state of Michigan in order to pursue their career when they get out. And those are some things that we're also doing.
Okay, let's go to the bad news then. How many bills have you voted against in the last 4 months?
Wow, probably most of them.
Yeah, okay. Now explain why. I mean, I know why, but it's because Republicans are in the majority in both the House and the Senate, significant, not just one or two votes difference, and they can pretty much dictate and get what they want, and they seem to be on a tirade ever since the lame duck session of bills that, well, you identify what sort of things you've been against but have passed nonetheless.
Ever since the right to work. Obviously, there's been contention in the House and in the Senate. And it was interesting, though. I didn't mention this last time because it hadn't happened yet. But in our very first meeting in Lansing in January, and, of course, we're still smarting after the right to work vote, the governor came into our caucus on the very first day. And we were there, you know, getting ready to start our new session with the new reps, and he walked in and said, "Guys, I'm going to need your help." And we just said, "Excuse me?" And he said, "I'm going to need your help on this new roads bill that I'm going to try to push through. We're not going to get any help. I'm not going to get any help at all from the Republicans, mm-hmm. but we need to fix our roads, and I know you guys are interested in that. So please help me get this new, you know, road bill through." And we just said, you know, we didn't say anything to him. We didn't, you know, thank you, Governor, and clapped and see ya. But when he left, you know, what happens in caucus stays in caucus. But when he left, you know, got to tell you, there weren't too many representatives happy about cooperating after we just got kicked around the previous month. Mm-hmm. So, but that's a big issue, and it is an issue that we're concerned about. And we know that the roads have to be fixed and they have to be repaired. How we pay for it is the big, you know, flying the ointment, as they say. You know, the devil's in the details. So do we raise the gas tax? Do we raise the cost of registration fees? Should it all be put on the middle class and lower class? Should businesses have to pay into it since they use the roads too? Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of filling in the blanks there and who's paying for it. But I think most people would agree that our roads are not in the best shape. I mean, they're ranked one of the worst in the state, so we have to do something.
My news director here at WHFR, Dennis Reimars, wants to say something, but I hadn't introduced him yet, so now he's introduced.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's official. I have to say something smart. No, I just was going to say, to your credit, it is tempting to say, you know what? You railroaded us a little bit, so we don't want to play ball, even though it's something that we need. But to your credit, you looked at it as something, and were able to, I don't know, distance yourself from the whatever happened in December.
Yeah, and we have to, you know, and it's tough. It's not easy because it seems like both sides are trying to work with each other to get things done. But it always seems like we have to act first. If you do this, then we'll give you this. And every time we act first and do what they want us to do, we don't get what we want.
Gosh, it sounds like my marriage. A little give and take, right?
Yeah. Hopefully she's not listening, Dennis. Anyway, no. Well, of course, this sort of divisiveness or battle, you know, we won't do anything you want to do, and therefore you turn around, you're not going to help them do anything they want to do in terms of Dems and Republicans.
Right.
I sure wish there was more independence. And I think you're a man, from what you said in the past, that is willing to look at an issue with committees, doing research and listening to perspectives from all sides.
Right.
And actually just getting a plan and doing it. I mean, obviously, if you don't do something, the problem will continue. But if you do something in the wrong way, it could get worse, I know.
Right.
But, you know, there are some objective facts in the world. They may not be Democratic facts. They may not be Republican facts. Mm-hmm. But there are people who do this research, and they have this information that's mostly unbiased about even what's the best way to raise money for road building. I mean, there's other states that are doing it, and so on. And so I think we just have to do – we can't rush in because somebody in some lobbyist organization has drawn up a bill they want to pass without discussion nationwide. And we've already talked about a couple organizations that have been doing this for primarily Republican groups.
Right.
Without discussion on, first of all, what's right for Michigan, but also what is the best if you put – the politics aside, if that's possible. I mean, you always have the votes from the Dems, from the Republicans, but if you put the politics aside, then maybe you can get to a plan that actually is a smart plan, and people should vote for it. So this sort of divisiveness is really awful. I know the Democrats, maybe you want to explain in the House, was it January or February, there was a press release about a package of bills that you had presented to either undo or to straighten out some of the tax burden on people in Michigan. It was sort of a partial alternative budget plan.
Right.
Although I didn't see your name at the top of it, Dave Kinesic from Dearborn Heights got one of his names up higher. But I'm sure that you know of it and you were supportive of it. The problem is it probably won't – none of those individual elements will get out of committee.
No. But we thought it was important to let people know that there is an alternate plan. There is another plan that will work. Mm-hmm. The first 2 years I was a state rep, we pretty much let the Republicans dictate what was going to be said in the media. And we pretty much were saying, no, that's not right. No, it's not going to work. No, they're wrong. But we didn't have an alternative plan. But we heard that loud and clear when we went around the state and had our town hall meetings across the state. And we heard from people saying, hey, guys, speak up a little bit more. Tell us what your plan is. And so under the new leadership of Tim Grimo, we decided to do that. And we went out again and said, these are the priorities that we have, and this is how we can fund it, you know, because people said, well, you know, Republicans have all the answers. Well, we don't think they do. We think we've got some answers too, and if they will work with us, we can work together and get things done. So that's why we came out with ways to not only to indicate what we like, but indicate how we can pay for it. And one of the things that was priority for me, and I'm glad that we put it in, was creating jobs through film incentives. Of course, they've been up, they've been down. They've been at 25 million, they've went up to 100 million, they went back down to 25, and then they went back up to 50. Now we're back down to 25 million again. We'd like to see that double to 50 million as it was last year. And we think it creates jobs, and we think it creates excitement about our state and gives people, you know, a reason to come to Michigan.
Yeah, on that one, you know, as a telecom instructor, and I think you've heard me say this too, I have a lot of friends in the film industry and other professors who teach and research this. What the film community nationwide and internationally needs is to know there's going to be something there, and it's going to be guaranteed. It's mm-hmm. going to be secure, because it takes a couple of years to get a project together, and they don't want to have, of course, a tax situation changing while they're already in pre-production right. or already shooting, although usually that would be grandfathered if they get that far.
Right.
But the sad fact is, and you're right about the $25 million, George, everyone I know who's actually in the industry says that's not enough to get the infrastructure in place from enough movies being made here. You have to do it at least 5 years or more until the new studio complexes and the facilities are in place and proven, you know, good word of mouth for them nationally, so that the state can then cut back. And there's many evidences, New Mexico and other states that have got into it big. They've set up their infrastructure and they cut back the support because people want to go there now just because it's great facilities, and people are already in place to help them manage the details. So $25 million is not enough. But $50 million for one more year won't be enough either.
I mean,
we've already seen the studio in Allen Park never happen.
Yeah.
I think the one in Pontiac might still be semi-functional.
Yeah.
But,
well, they have their movie Oz was just released
right.
recently.
But of course, it's not all the scenes from that were filmed there, but still.
Right. Good portion. Actually, I was there. We took a tour one day, mm-hmm. and we were there while they were filming some scenes
sure.
for that movie. It was great. And it's state of the art. That facility in Pontiac,
sure.
there's only two in the world that have the same technology as that one. One in Florida and one in Budapest, Hungary.
That's the advantage of building new, you know, and we certainly need new facilities if you're going to have a film industry and business here. But if there can't be a multi-year commitment, at least three more years at, let's say, 50,000.
Yeah.
I'm afraid or 350 million. 50 million for three more years.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. I mean, because I just know the industry. I know what they expect and how they want to count on things. And we still don't quite have the secure infrastructure. And nobody knows what's going to happen from year to year. So if they can't plan for a few years, I mean, even if you say, well, it's going to go 3 years, then we're going to drop down 10% each year after that or something, that would be fine. The film industry could do that because by then there should be enough good word of mouth and coordinators and support teams in place. And people will come here because they want to come here.
That's right.
And so that's difficult, but that's one of those incentive things. And I think as Democrats, you probably heard that this it was on Jon Stewart's show this week, Dennis, did you see it? There's a student at University of Massachusetts that actually discovered a problem with the big-time conservative report that was about different nations in the world and how the only effective strategy in difficult times, economic times, is to cut the budget, austerity. And they had evidence that that's what works. And so that's what all these countries, Germany, Italy, Spain, you know, England, have all been doing. And it doesn't work. I mean, it's just continuing. And the student actually got the data, the spreadsheet data, Excel data, from these people because he was supposed to just a graduate student. They actually gave it to him. They gave him all the data because he said he'd like to see it for his graduate report. Mm-hmm. And, oh, my God, right on the first page, there's a big error. There was a spreadsheet error that even he said his girlfriend saw, who was also a business major, though. But and it completely negates the whole premise. These are two prominent academics that have been used. This report's been used for the last several years by countries all around the world, and it clearly shows that incentives are what builds back up the economy, and that austerity, it cuts it, like on the average of like 1.5% every year. It doesn't help. And incentives, 4-5% increase. And it was a simple spreadsheet error, and here everybody is quoting what they summarized were the results, but in fact they made an error in their own calculations. I mean, they did the research, they did all these numbers,
right.
but then they didn't use the spreadsheet properly. They had an entry error. You can't say the computer did it, but you know they entered something in the wrong place.
Well, that was one of the governor's main initiatives when he came in, was to eliminate all incentives. Period.
Right now,
to phase them all out,
mm-hmm.
and that was his strategy.
He obviously read that original spreadsheet.
Right. Yeah, right.
He was influenced by the wrong information.
Well, think about it. I mean, if you have children, what is more effective? Giving them incentive, by definition, motivating them, or by, you know, taking things away? You know, I mean, just it's kind of, in my opinion, it's kind of a logical thing. And no, I didn't see that particular Daily Show with Jon Stewart, but I read about that.
That's my great source here.
I think that was one of the things that I was always in favor of as far as giving business credits for creating jobs. You know, we gave the business community $1.8 billion, $2 billion, whatever number you want to use, because the bottom line was, well, because we're going to give them the money and they're going to create jobs. Mm-hmm. Why don't we give them the money when they create the jobs, not if they create the jobs?
That's a good hook there. Yeah. I like that. Well, here, let me go down the list as much as I can of these big issues that I know have been kicking around there. I think just... was it discussed the last couple of days, probably in Lansing? I don't know if anything passed. No fault insurance changes?
No, we're still weeding
still
that talking. Out. It hasn't come to a head yet. It probably will in May sometime. They want to try to get it taken care of before then. There is still a big, big split on this. Most Democrats are going to be voting no. Most Republicans would be voting yes. But we have closed the gap on the number of Democrats and Republicans now to 59 to 50. So
my understanding on the bill is that, again, it was pre-written from some conservative think tank out of state. It is so complicated that most people don't even understand what all the details are about. Basically, we hear about, everybody will get $65 to maybe $100 next year as a benefit if it passes, a reduction in their auto insurance.
Right.
But then $1 million cap on lifetime benefits for anybody who's injured in an auto accident. But I can't figure this out in the way I see it. Michigan, I know, has one of the most expensive rates in the country for auto insurance.
Right.
That is collective average, one of the most expensive. And aren't they making enough profit in Michigan? They don't need this sort of extra profit? I mean, I can't put the two together. This is crazy. I understand it's very costly if somebody's very disabled and needs extra care for 20, 30 more years.
They're saying, well, I've been lobbied, obviously,
mm-hmm.
by
both
sides of the issue. The insurance companies are saying, look, roughly, 99.5% or whatever number they want to use are not in the catastrophic area as far as needing care. And so it's only a small percentage. And I think the number that they gave me, the last number they gave me, was maybe 32 individuals that are on this catastrophic care. So it's not like it's going to affect a whole lot of people if the cap was at $1 million. It will affect those 32 families big time if the cap was at $1 million. So they're saying, $1 million is plenty of coverage. You look across the country, there's 50,000, there's 100,000 cap, there's we're not looking at a capping at $100,000 or $200,000 or even $500,000. We're looking at $1 million cap.
Right.
And that's going to cover the majority of people for their lifetime. We don't need any more than that. We don't know if those numbers are accurate or not.
Right.
But those are the numbers that we've been given.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're hanging the carrot out there saying, we're going to cut your insurance rates. The latest figure that we've heard is $125.
But they're really only promising that for
1 year. For 1 year.
They're not saying that it's going to be a 10% reduction from now on. That's crazy how only 1 year. Why is it only 1 year if you're saving so much?
Right.
It just doesn't make sense. Let me move on.
Okay.
Obviously, as a senior, I still have an extra tax on my teacher pension every year.
Uh-huh.
Thanks, but no thanks. In fact, I read an editorial from Rick Hoagland, I believe it is, on MLive.com. Dennis goes there a lot. And his opinion was that maybe Governor Snyder's business plan is to get the seniors to actually move out. And get young people here who will be entrepreneurs or something and revitalize Michigan. We're just, I guess, you know, parasites or something living off the corporate, the public funds. And I don't know. That's pretty harsh, but I didn't think he was that much of a liberal. But it does seem that certain groups, like the poor and even the lower middle classes and the seniors, are, taking a lot of the burden here.
And teachers, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and teachers. Speaking for my daughter and my previous life, too.
Yeah.
This is it's crazy. So I know you're doing what you can there, but still. What is the Public Education Authority? Is it now in place? This is that new, it's really an extra governmental group. It's got, I think, one or two legislators, but then it's got an attorney and just three guys, I know. and they're applying some principles everything should be online education, so we get the cost per student from $13,000 average down to $5,000. Is that in place now?
Well,
there was a bill last month that said that whatever authority we have now, that it's been at least strengthened, it's
right.
been increased.
Well, the EAA was the group and organization that put together the new format for the city of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the experiment. Experiments in the
okay.
city of Detroit, and if it worked, let's expand that to the whole state. Well, it's only been in place since last September, but we're saying it needs some time to see if it actually is working. So they brought in the testimony from all the kids and all the parents saying what a great thing this is. And then we went out and actually visited the schools and visited the classrooms unannounced because we didn't want them to prepare for us. Of course, everything's going to be rosy.
What did you find?
Well, we found that the kids are not happy. The kids are more afraid than they were before because they don't think their schools are safe. They're not getting the textbooks. They're actually putting them in front of a computer and saying, go at it, have fun. And it's really dumbing down the process because a lot of these computer programs that they're using, the software, are like cartoons, literally cartoons that these high school kids are learning, trying to learn English and math with a little cartoon character telling them what to do. And so we found out that it wasn't exactly what they were making it out to be. The gentleman that's in charge of that was actually fired in Colorado for doing the same thing, to trying to implement the same program there.
Uh-huh.
It didn't work. So naturally, they hired him in Detroit to run the city of Detroit. And now that the law has passed, it'll be in effect for some school districts in the state of Michigan that fall below 5%, the lowest 5% rankings of our schools will now be forced to go into these EAA management, and we don't like it because it's the bottom 5%. The problem is the bottom 5%, you're always going to have a bottom 5%. So every year there's going to be another 5% brought over
mm-hmm.
until pretty soon the EAA is going to be bigger than the Michigan public school system.
Our special guest in the studio today is Michigan Representative for the 15th District, George Durrani. And we're going to try to take a little break here. You're not going to take a break. You're going to listen to some commentaries from our favorite populist in Texas and Jim Hightower. But we're going to come back. I have to comment, though, before we leave, and that is that the EAA, again, it's not the Michigan Board of Education.
No.
Okay, it's not the state board. And there's not even any teachers on it, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I don't
it's
think
these
you're
three
right.
guys, two former legislators, and I'm not saying they're not necessarily smart, but they have an agenda which has really nothing to do with direct experience in education itself. And as a teacher with 45 years experience in education, that's not only an insult, that's just wrong. These people are jumping to decisions about things that matter, greatly to our society, to our children, and they're not. I'm sorry. I haven't seen the credentials stated anywhere for them that shows they're actually competent or qualified to all of a sudden take this over. And who the heck are they? Some outside little group of three people, two, as I said, two former legislators, but or maybe one's a current legislator. I could be
I don't think so.
No, okay.
No.
Just it's so wrong here. Well, there's other things that are going on up there in Lansing, and we'll get back to George Durrani after Jim Hightower. Listen up here. He does talk about a great populist who is in the Senate, in the United States Senate, and what he is doing these days.
Ebenezer Scrooge, the Dickens character, perfectly personified the nasty rich. For example, when asked to make a charitable donation for people trapped in poverty, Scrooge curled his lip in contempt and snarled, "Are there no prisons?" Blessedly, our American society has progressed well past such heartless disdain. Unless, of course, you happen to be poor in Ohio or Georgia or in the nationwide utopia envisioned by Newt Gingrich. Ohio's Civil Liberties Union recently issued a report documenting the Scroogean return of debtors' prisons, finding that municipal courts there are jailing poor people unable to pay court fines. Last summer, a suburban Cleveland court threw 45 people in jail because they couldn't come up with the money for fines they were assessed. And the Sandusky Municipal Court imprisoned 75 down-and-outers for the same, quote, crime. Besides the fact that jailing indigents for debts costs way more than the fines they owe, it also violates the U.S. and Ohio constitutions. But what the hey, on to Georgia, which has enhanced the debtor prison experience by privatizing it. Say you roll through a stop sign. Uniquely, the Peachtree State counts that as a criminal offense. Now, say you can't pony up for the full fine. Suddenly, you're in the clutches of a for-profit private probation corporation. It charges probationers a $15 startup fee, a $25 photo fee, and a myriad of other fees, on top of the fine they owe. Fail to pay? Go to jail. Where did this rip-off system come from? A private probation outfit bribed the head of Georgia's Board of Pardons to get it passed. This is Jim Hightower saying, don't forget Newt. Gingrich says America needs to bring back workhouses for welfare children. Neat, huh? Let's criminalize poverty. Scrooge lives.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
So your heart doctor says to you, we need to do a little open heart surgery to make a minor tweak in your blood flow. Whoa, time for a second opinion. That's why Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont is such a useful citizen. When confronted with a wonky conventional wisdom of economic experts, his common sense kicks in, causing him to question authority and seek a second opinion. For example, Sanders is presently questioning Wall Street, the corporate media, Republican lawmakers, and the Obama White House for their insistence that our Social Security program needs a little operation. No worries, they say, for we're only talking about a minor tweak called the chained CPI. It's merely a reworking of the consumer price index, they claim, and it will not, repeat not, cut benefits, but simply adjust the flow of annual cost of living increases in the program. BS alert, shouts Bernie. While these well-off cognoscenti won't notice a downward adjustment in their payments, it would be a real hit to typical retirees who count on that money for more than two-thirds of their incomes. Sanders points out that the change proposed by Obama would mean that today's 65-year-old retirees would each lose more than $650 a year by their 75th birthday. That's not a tweak, it's a cut. And it's especially painful when you're trying to make ends meet on $14,000 a year. When the elite policy wonks and politicos claim that chained CPI is a more accurate measure of inflation, they're completely ignorant of the reality of life for the elderly. Most 75-year-olds aren't buying new cars or 70-inch TVs. The biggest chunk of their meager incomes go to health care, which is grossly inflationary. This is Jim Hightower saying, to stay connected to reality on the Social Security fight, connect with Bernie at sanders.senate.gov.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont, and he's an independent. I believe there's also an independent senator serving in the U.S. Congress from Maine now, actually a former governor got elected that way. And is it interesting that these independents, in these two cases anyway, that is elected without the support of Democratic or Republican Party, but they are voting what I would call like old-time Democrats. And and George Derwiney, our representative, who's a Democrat from the Dearborn area to Lansing, is here in the studio with us. You said there's an independent you know of in the Michigan legislature right now, right, George?
We had Representative John Alumba, who was a Democrat, but now he's our first and only independent House of Representatives.
We can't say he became a more progressive necessarily. You said he crossed the aisle and is voting.
He is taking some Republican votes.
Whatever. But sometimes I think that the party politics, Mike, and theories get in the way of reality.
Yeah.
And I've stated on this show that I think there's great answers out there, and there's great answers in a number of political philosophies. I think it depends on the problem, exactly what is the best solution. But I know that's very complicated. It requires a lot of thinking that is not easy to do. Tell us about the situation you mentioned about the road repair in Michigan. Is there a hope that something will get passed in that regard?
Yeah, I think so. I think that we're working toward that that plan that would make most people accept that we need to spend a little money to get the roads repaired. I think it'll be a combination of a gas tax and increase in registration fees, but also we're looking at making it so maybe truckers that come in from out of state that are based out of state would have to pay a certain surcharge tax, also raising industries like the trucking industry more of a part of the solution to maybe raise the cost of diesel tax fuels too, because of course most trucks are on diesel. So if it's a combination of things, I think more people buy into it.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Okay. Let me bring up if there's been any movement on women's rights. We know that there's some welfare cuts that we mentioned. Jack Lessenberry mentioned cuts for supporting children and seniors and some health programs. What about women's, and we talked about this last time, and I wanted you to clarify your position, women's reproductive rights. Is there any movement, any further movement to make it difficult or more difficult for women to choose to have an abortion, for example? Just want an update on that.
Well, I'd love to update you on it, except that we haven't really said a whole lot about that.
Nothing's come up right now.
No, they're staying away from that issue completely. There was talk to reintroduce some language about that, but the Republicans have stayed quiet on that. I think they're more concerned about the education budgets right now and trying to get the road thing taken care of, auto insurance. Those are the three things that are on their minds right now. We, as Democrats, had a tax relief plan that we put together that I'll talk about real briefly to restore some of the things that were taken away. Mm-hmm. One of the things, of course, was the earned income tax credit that was reduced by 70% from 20% to I think 4%, and our plan is to raise that back up to 11%. We want to also restore the $600 per child deduction that was taken away last year.
Tax credit.
Yep, tax credit. Yeah. The repeal of the pension tax would be nice. That's another bill that one of our representatives has. Restore the homestead property tax credit. Now, some folks, like my mom, who's 89 years old and doesn't make a whole lot of money, she can still get her $1,200 state tax home property tax credit. But if you're making over a certain amount of money, and it's not a lot, I want to say $30,000 or $35,000, and your home is valued at an SEV value of, I think, $75,000, you lose that credit. And a lot of people lost that $1,200 tax credit. That's a check for $1,200 that people are not getting this year. And they weren't aware of that until, of course, it came time to do their taxes. And they're going to say, hey, what happened to my credit? Well, the Republicans, unfortunately, took that away. We're trying to get that put back in for next year. So those are some of the things that we're looking at to try to – and then there's also expenses, too, that they took away when you're moving for a job. They took those credits away, and we're trying to get those back also.
I think you summarized those in an editorial in the Times-Herald, March 24th. I happened to pull that up today from the Internet. And good luck on all that. There's, obviously, we can talk about education funding, too. That's, overall, the last couple of years, it's been a big cut. Henry Ford Community College now, for a number of reasons, not our fault, finds ourselves millions of dollars in debt for this year. And it's obviously, if we had more funding from anybody else, that wouldn't be as bad.
Right.
And it's not that we have been charging one of the lowest tuitions of any college level program of a higher ed. So you could say, well, if you're not bringing in the money, then that's why. But in fact, we're trying to do a service, I think. That's what community college is all about, trying to allow a quality education, a higher education for people that couldn't afford to go to the four-year schools, at least not initially anyway.
Yeah, we just passed the new omnibus bill, which was included the universities, colleges, and K-12. They put those all together. Unfortunately, we'd like to see those separated so we can vote individually on each particular school aid bill, but they like to roll them all in. So you have to take a vote. So if you're for two of the things and not the other one, you have a tough vote to take. Do I vote yes? Do I vote no? Mm-hmm. And there could be some good things. Henry Ford Community College, I think, fell in the middle of the range of actually increase. Generally throughout the state, the increase was like 2%, and the lowest being community college is getting 1.5, and the highest being 2.5. I think Henry Ford is getting 1.8.
Yeah, I think
that's the House version anyway.
Right. A couple of weeks ago, I saw somebody around here said they expected about 1.5 or lower. That'd be about right. Maybe that's a little more. But
well, the House version is that. Now it goes to the Senate, and then the Senate can play with the numbers.
And folks may not know that funding to colleges and community colleges, too, is not based on number of students. In the olden days, I remember 40 years back, it used to be per student, just like kind of the support for the public schools is a per student allotment, although it varies from district to district still.
Right. Yep.
But and Henry Ford Community College, we got all these extra students by at least 3,000 or 4,000 extra students after 2008, people out of work, desperate for retraining, and some getting assistance to be retrained. We hardly got any increase at all. We're just expected to accommodate those people. Obviously, you need more teachers. You need to finish off your facilities. We had to complete our parking lots to accommodate all the extra cars.
Right.
And it just, it's been, that's really been one of the reasons why we're so budget tied right now, is because we've been very successful. We have a lot of students, and they're, students are paying, tuition pays like almost close to 80%, right. 70 to 80% of what our budget is. So that's great. That rest still has to be coming in, and it's just, it doesn't come in on a per student basis, or we'd be doing fine if there was that calculation. Right. I don't know why that calculation can't still be used for colleges and community colleges. I know they went to and say, well, we'll just give you like 2% more next year, but what if your student enrollment goes up? I thought they wanted more people to enroll in college. I thought that was a good plan to get higher grade of skilled worker out there, or people who were better citizens for.
Our K-12 funding actually did go down in Dearborn. We're losing.
Oh, no.
The House version that just passed is $22 per student in Dearborn. That means roughly $418,000 less that the Dearborn Public Schools will be receiving next year. But hopefully that's what's going to pass. And I say hopefully because the Senate version is losing $108 per student, which would be over $2 million.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're hoping that the House version holds up through the Senate, and Dearborn will only lose $22 per student. The governor's version also would have been right around that number, too. So there was no way for Dearborn to make out this year on budget. It's unfortunately, but most cities, actually, most districts will lose money this year. And we don't understand that at all. And obviously, that's the reason why, as Democrats, we all voted against it. Actually, there were two Republicans that voted against it, too. So the vote was I think 57 to 52, and one person wasn't there. So it passed 57-52 because two Republicans also voted against the new omnibus education bill.
Okay, here's my satirical question. Anyone introduce a bill for allowing same-sex marriage in Michigan?
They're both looking
quiet
at me.
Quiet.
I mean, France just did a great thing.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, but I know it's not. It would be illogical for Republican majorities to pass that in Michigan. But here's a legislative note, George.
Okay.
When France last week adopted it in the parliament, and there was a lot of discussion, and you know, as a previously mostly Roman Catholic country, there was demonstrations against that, not thinking it was appropriate. But when they passed it, they also passed a one-time national holiday to celebrate.
Really?
Now, when was the last time you guys not only passed something but gave us a day off, or hopefully with pay, in Michigan? I think that's a wonderful idea. Whenever you actually do something,
like a
actually,
huge monumental thing, right?
Actually do so. I think most people would just celebrate if we actually had something that was finally resolved and done. I know. You always had to keep after everything. Okay, let's get back to other things. But I love that. Legislating a one-time only national holiday to sort of celebrate the passage of, well, in this case, allowing same-sex marriage. But, oh, well. There's got to be some positive initiatives somewhere. What are we doing for the environment? Supposedly, Snyder and the Republicans' record has been not very good at all in terms of preserving Michigan's clean water, clean air. What anything happening there that is positive, or are still some negatives coming about?
Well, you know, we just passed a bill recently regarding dredging, you know, for the bays.
Because the water levels are dropping. Some areas, like Traverse City, is down 11 inches on average now.
Yeah, it's amazing how the water levels have fallen so far. And so we did do that, and most environmentalists were okay with that. You know, I actually had some groups from Sierra Club that came and visited me because they're big supporters of mine. And so they were happy that we were doing something that they thought was environmentally sound.
Anything about coal plants?
No, nothing's
going ahead with those.
No, okay. No. The other thing that we're worried
about
coal plants is fracking.
Right.
That's the thing that they actually came to talk to me about because they're concerned about drilling so deep into the Michigan soil with these chemicals that we're not really sure what chemicals that they're actually using because of patent restrictions that they can't tell us what's going into the ground. But we know from the studies that we've taken from the water levels that it's just not good for our water system, and it's not good for the environment because fracking also we have found causes minor earthquakes,
mm-hmm.
and it's true, it does.
To explain briefly, if I understand it, fracking is a process of trying to get natural gas released from the ground, okay, to use. But it technically the term is hydrofracking. They use water, but it's water plus these strange chemicals.
Yes.
That they inject sort of sideways to move the ground around to allow the natural gas to come up. But sometimes they get methane, sometimes they get, really toxic things coming up.
And it gets into the water system.
Yeah, if it's not well regulated, it can be disastrous for people that maybe without thinking have allowed companies to come in and do that on their lands.
Well, what we're saying is, what they're saying is what they want to do is do the fracking. Yeah, if there's a problem, we'll do the testing, and then we'll stop.
Yeah,
we're saying, let's do the testing first. Tell us what the chemicals you're using.
Well, they're saying they can't because it's proprietary information.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So they're not giving us
that's not good enough for me, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just,
really? You know.
It's a secret. We can't tell you.
Right.
But I'm sure it won't hurt anything.
So, and then, of course, you've seen the YouTube videos probably where people are turning on their water and lighting their match, and the water's lighting up on fire coming out of the tap.
And that's only cool the first few times. After that, it's not funny anymore.
No. So, but yeah, we have to do a better job of regulating that for sure.
Can't do too much about the welfare cuts, right, that I mentioned, that Lessenberry mentioned about the kids. It's just going to happen. The governor's budget people have the right to do that themselves. It's not a legislative thing, right?
Right.
You could pass a law that would change some of that funding, I guess, but
Yeah, but
that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
No, okay.
No. The governor is pretty set on what he wants to do in that regard. And yeah, anytime you attack groups like the poor and the, you know, disenfranchised, I mean, it's just plain wrong. And we don't understand why these things are happening. Again, like you said earlier, it's almost like he wants people to move out of the state of Michigan. But you know, we keep the fight going. We're fighting stronger and harder than ever since I've been there, and we know that winning elections in 2014 starts today. So that's why I think we're going to be very vocal for the next year and a half, and we're not going to wait till 2014, because we think that there's a good chance we can change the governor's seat over to Democrat. We think there's an excellent chance of winning the House back, and we're gonna fight hard for those changes.
Obviously, there's still a lot of discussion. People are looking for strong Democratic candidates, too. Looks to me now that Debbie Dingell is not has chosen not to explore a Senate run to replace Senator Levin, who's retiring, that maybe Gary Peters is got enough name recognition and positive PR to be that candidate, but don't really have candidates selected yet for governor, do we?
No, the biggest name that we've heard is Mark Schauer. So
yeah, I haven't heard him. So who is Mark Schauer?
He is a former. You got to put me on the spot. Was he a senator or congressman from the Battle Creek area?
Yeah, see how well known
yeah,
he is?
Yeah,
okay. Well, he could be a great guy.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you take someone or find someone who is a great guy but doesn't have the name recognition, it's just going to be a larger effort to get the support out there. Although, I think it'd be great to find someone.
But, you know, Snyder came out of nowhere. Nobody knew who he was.
But he was rich.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Right, and I think we can all agree his marketing leading up to the election was solid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't yelling like the mayor of Bernero was. So, you know, they were both different, and I think that's what affected people.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't respect Snyder. He was on the show along with Verge opposite other times and not across the table.
No, they were not.
But I could never get a straight answer out of Snyder about really what he was going to do.
Right.
And that was cagey for him, as he didn't have to get into the convert. But Bernero, he always gave the same soundbite.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what he was asked. I mean, he had a pat answer, and that was it. You could never ask him to go beyond or pass. So he had an answer, but it was like, you know, what really have you said? So he was like one step better to me in answering questions. So it's going to be a tough time for Democrats and for people who would like to see the Republicans go a different direction. I mean, the so-called Tea Party group, do people who say they're sort of Tea Party supporters have much influence in the Republicans in the state now? Do you think that's going to grow?
I think it is. I think they do have influence, because I think some of the votes that the people are Republicans are taking are because they're fearful that they might have a Tea Partier oppose them in the primary. So I think they're listening to the Tea Party groups and are basing their decisions on who they may run against us. So, yeah, I think it does have an influence. For
well, sure. That's going to be a battle within the Republican Party, certainly, to see who's going to
Absolutely.
Win there. What's happening in the next couple of months, George, that you want to tell our listeners for as we wrap up our interview today with you?
Well, we're going to get down to the nitty-gritty, like I said, on the auto insurance bills. I think you're going to hear a lot more about that in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And the road issue, too, and how we're going to actually fund the roads. Those are two big issues to look for, because I think it'll be in the news quite a bit, and the debate will go on that probably for another month.
Okay. Please don't raise the tax on diesel fuel, okay?
I knew that was coming somewhere.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I got a diesel car.
Clean diesel.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a truck driver.
Clean diesel. That's right. No.
Okay. Very good.
Well, thank you so much, George Durant, for being on
thank
the new
you.
WHFR Journal. We've got some wrap-up things from last week when I had Mayor O'Reilly here, so... But good luck to you, George. We've got some.
Thank you.
Got some little WHFR logo freebies for you.
I appreciate the pen. I love the pen.
There you go. Yeah, use it to vote nay on terrible
write
bills.
Write some great bills.
Yeah. Well, write some new ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on here. Thanks so much, George Durrani, our legislative representative. We'll talk to you again soon. I just wanted to follow up for some of our listeners from last week. I love long, in-depth interviews, especially with people like Mayor O'Reilly and George Durrani, because they're willing to give details and facts. And I could go on longer and, you know, I felt like last week with the mayor I could. I did get this one question that was only one question emailed to me for Mayor Riley, and it actually came in before the show last week, but last week Mayor O'Reilly's schedule changed, and I had to interview him at 9:30 in the morning. Well, you know, 3.5 hours before the show actually ran. And so I couldn't accommodate this question. But you ask, this person asked about the emergency alert sirens in Dearborn. He says they've been replaced and the volume seems lower. Yeah, the system didn't work when they were higher, and people complained, especially in the summer, about how loud they were when they were tested. That system is basically has been proven now after about 20 years the wrong way to go. For those that can hear them and pay attention, good for you. But the city of Dearborn is coming up with other ways to get in touch with you, such as asking you to connect your cell phones and your home computers to Nixle. That's NIXLE.com. Once you go to that website, let them know you live in Dearborn and your zip code, and you'll automatically get messages every time there's a problem, and you'll know immediately what's going on. It's not fear-mongering. You know, they do remind you about really good, significant things. I get probably 2 or 3 Nixle messages a week on my cell phone, and it's really actually a very, very positive thing. But I'm sorry, those emergency alert sirens just didn't work. People have been complaining about the noise from them for the testing. And even when there have been emergencies, if you're indoors in winter and there's a big storm outside, you can't hear them at all. There's no way, you know, especially if you're huddled in your basement, you know, during a thunderstorm or something, it's just not going to come through. I'm sorry, Dennis, he laughed at that joke, and I need people laughing, but your microphone wasn't up, so...
No, I have a laugh track available for next time.
What's happening with the budget of the city of Dearborn? Well, Mayor O'Reilly, as he said last week, has made a proposal, and everything is on the website. Okay, so if you really want to do your research and find out what the budget is proposing that's going to happen or not for next year, you need to go to cityofdearborn.org. And they're having public meetings scheduled beginning next Wednesday, May 1st, on a variety of topics that are in that budget. And again, the schedule is May 1st, May 6th, May 7th, May 8th, and then May 15th. And then they're going to, at the end of the month, take it to the city council at 7 p.m. to vote on Tuesday, May 28th. And there will be a final public hearing. Not final public hearing, but the public hearing beyond these topics that were presented that I said is scheduled for 6:30 p.m. Thursday, May 23rd. But these other meetings, it's open to the public, and just go to the cityofdearborn.org website for that. It's 2 o'clock. This is WHFR Dearborn. Joanne Korchinskin, Highway 61. We'll be beginning shortly. We just really wanted to go off today with just a mention and a tribute to Richie Havens. That's Richie, R-I-C-H, no T-I-E, H-A-V-E-N-S. I'd call him a folk singer, singing songs of social change, often covered a lot of songs by other important writers, but I particularly like this one. It's called Lives in the Balance. It was written by Jackson Brown, if anybody remembers him, and it was title of one of Brown's major albums, but I like this version by Richie Havens. He passed away this week at age 72, I believe, and just a great campaigner and donating his time for raising money for a lot of very good social causes. So we're going to finish the journal today with the music from Richie Havens, Lives in the Balance. This is WHFR, Dearborn.